two on every corner and two in the middle of every block. Pigs, occupying forces, Gestapo. And not just in the black community. And a lot of people say, well, we wish you good luck. And we want you to know that we are behind you. And I want those to know who wish me good luck. And those who say that they are behind me, I want them to know this, that I wish you good luck. And I'm behind you. See? And I don't know how to go about waiting until people start practicing what they preach. I don't know how to go about waiting on that. Because all I see is a very critical situation, a chaotic situation, where there's pain and there's suffering and there's death. And I see no justification for waiting until tomorrow to say what you can say tonight, for waiting until tomorrow to do what you can do today. I see no justification for waiting until other people get ready. I see no justification for not moving, even if I have to move by myself. And I think that my attitude towards these criminals, my parole officer included, the criminals who control the prison system, who control the parole board, I can't reconcile things with them, because for so long I've watched them people's throats. I knew that there was something wrong with the way that they were treating people. I knew that by no stretch of the imagination could that be right, that there was something basically fatal about that whole process. And it took me a long time to put my finger on it, at least to my own satisfaction. And after seeing that they were almost the opposite of what they were supposed to be, strike that, almost, that they were beyond the opposite of what they were supposed to be, I got extremely angry at them. And I don't want to see them get away with anything. I want to see them in the penitentiary, because they belong in there, because they're committing crimes against the human rights of people. They belong in the penitentiary. And we're not going to trap them into the penitentiary. You see, people try to look at this prison system, and everybody knows that it's out of hand. Everybody knows that crime is rampant in this country and that it's undesirable. It's hard to go around and justify crime. We in the Black Panther Party, we justify certain activity against certain enemies of the people, because we do not define that as crime. We turn their definitions around, and we define that as people moving for their liberation in a chaotic situation. And I just want to say this about this prison system. Everything I say is about the prison system, either the one distinctly set aside or the one out here in which we live. Make no mistakes about that, you know. But this other one, this one that we set aside and we label it the penitentiary, all of this talk about how do you deal with rehabilitation when you focus on the adult penitentiaries, you're looking at the end of the line to try to see where a process begins. Because if you really want to understand and see what's behind this prison system, you have to look at juvenile hall. You have to go down to juvenile hall And that's where I started my career. At about the age of 12, for some charge, I don't know what it was, vandalism. I think I ripped off a bicycle, maybe two or three bicycles. Maybe I had a bicycle business, I don't remember, But it related to bicycles. And they took me to juvenile hall, and it took me about 6 months to get out again. But while I was there, I met a lot of people. I met a lot of real nice, groovy cats who were very active, very healthy people who had stolen bicycles and things like that. And I moved up the ladder from juvenile hall to Whittier, which is a reform school for youngsters. I graduated from there with honors and went to another one, a little higher, Preston School of Industry. And I graduated from that one, and they jumped me up into the big leagues, into the adult penitentiary system. But I noticed that every time I went back to jail, the same guys who were in juvenile hall with me were also there. Or they arrived there soon after I got there, or a little bit before I left. But they always seemed to make the scene.
The system that they have in California, they carry you from juvenile hall to the old folks' colony down in San Luis Obispo, which is across the tracks from where Huey P. Newton is. They take you in to juvenile hall, they carry you through their system, and they take you down to San Luis Obispo and wait for you to die shortly, and they bury you there if you have no one left out here to claim your body. And most people who end up there don't. And I noticed these waves, these generations. And I had a chance to watch other generations that came behind me. And I'd talk to them, And I'd ask them, had they been in jail before and where did they start? I wanted to know their story. And you will find graduating classes moving up from juvenile hall all the way up. And it occurred to me that this is a social failure at the root, one that cannot be justified by any stretch of the imagination. Not by any stretch of the imagination can the little children in the juvenile halls be condemned, because they're innocent and they're processed by an environment that they have no control over. If you look at the prisons, the adult prisons, you can't make heads or tails of them. You can't make heads or tails of that, because by the time they get there, they're there for murder, rape, robbery, and all of the high crimes. But when you look into their past, you'll find juvenile hall, and you have to ask yourself, why is there not in this country a program for young people that will interest them, that will actively involve them, and that will process them to be healthy individuals in a healthy environment and lead a healthy life? And until someone answers that question for me, the only attitude that I can have towards the prison system, including juvenile hall, is how do we tear the walls down and let those people out of there? That's the only question. How do we tear those walls down and let those people out of there? People look at the point in the Black Panther Party program that calls for freedom for all black men and women held in federal, state, county, local jails. And they find it hard to accept that particular point. They can relate to running the police out of the community, But they say those people in those prisons, they've committed crimes, they're convicted for crimes, and how can you even talk about bringing them out? If you did get them out, would you and the black community take them and put them on trial and send them back again? And I don't know how to deal with that. It just, no, no. Let them out and leave them alone. Let them out because they're hip to all of this out here now. Let them out, turn them over to the Black Panther Party. Give them to us and we will redeem them from the promises made by the Statue of Liberty and that was never fulfilled. But we have a program for them that will keep them active 24 hours a day. And I don't mean 8 big strong men in a big conspicuous truck robbing a Jive gas station for $75. When I sit down to conspire to commit a robbery, it's going to be the Bank of America or Chase Manhattan Bank or Brinks. Listen, I've been working with Bobby Seale, working on the biography of Huey P. Newton. Bob Shearer and I took Bobby Seale down to Carmel by the sea, but away from the sea. We went as far away from there as we could get. We went into a little cabin, and we got a fifth of scotch, a couple of chasers, and a tape recorder, and a large stack of blank tapes. And we said, Bobby, take a sip and talk about Brother Huey P. Newton. And Bobby started talking about Huey. And one of the things that just blew my mind is when he mentioned that prior to organizing the Black Panther Party, he and Huey had been planning a gigantic bank robbery. And that as they put their minds to work on that, because they were relating to the movement, and they recognized that they needed money for the movement, because the people were giving all the money to the churches, you dig it?
WBAI New York.
To the Democratic Party and to the Republican Party. So they knew that they needed money, and they knew that they had money in the bank. So they sat down and they started trying to put together a key to open the vaults. But as they thought about it, and as they thought about the implications, Bobby tells how one day, while they were discussing this, Huey jumped up and said, later for a bank, what we're talking about is politics. And what we're talking about essentially is the liberation of our people. So later for one Jive bank, let's organize the brothers and put them together, arm them for defense of the black community, and it will be like walking up to the White House and saying, oh, what's ours? So that there's a very interesting, there's a very key connection between insurrection carried out by oneself, a private, you know, a personal civil war. We define civil war, what, when society splits down the middle and you have two opposing sides? And does that have to be the definition? Can 5,000 people launch a civil war? Can 4,000 or 3,000 or 2 or 1 or 1/2 of 1,000 or half of that? Or can 10 people do that? Or can one person engage in civil war? I'm not a lawyer, and I'm definitely not a judge. But I would say that one person acting alone could in fact be engaged in a civil war against an oppressive system. And that's how I look upon those cats in those penitentiaries. Robbery, burglary, rape, murder, kidnap, anything. A response to a situation. A response to an environment. If you read any of the social sciences, read a book, and it will tell you that if you subject people to an unpleasant environment, you can predict that they will rebel against it. It's predictable. And that gives rise to a contradiction. Because when you have a social unit organized in such a way that people are moved to rebel against it in large numbers, how then do you come behind them and tell them that they owe a debt to society? I say the society owes a debt to them, and society doesn't look as though it wants to pay. And there's a young brother over in Juvenile Hall right now in Alameda County, by the name of Gregory Harrison, about 14 or 15 years old. He's the leader of the Black Students Union, I think at Tech High over there in Oakland. And at this moment, they have him over there charged with insurrection. Insurrection. Because the Black Student Union on that campus wants Black history added to the curriculum. They want an environment created on that campus, not that will teach Black people how to be Black, but that will remove the restraints so that they can just be themselves and their blackness will just automatically flourish. Like, you don't have to teach a rose how to be a rose or a tree how to be a tree. You just leave it alone and don't pour salt on the roots and it will be a rose or it will be a tree. And this piggish criminal system, this system
liberation of Black people from any restraints upon them, imposed upon them by hostile forces. And this is what we're about. This is what we're trying to do. Organize Black people, and also through the Peace and Freedom Party, to organize white people into machinery that will make a distinction between the people and the oppressors of the people.
How do you feel about the office of President of the United States? I mean, don't you feel that most of the people that, well, let's say the major candidates at this point, don't you think they're going to be serving as functionaries and perhaps don't even realize it?
They will be serving as functionaries, but I'm sure that they realize it. I think that they are able to recognize what they're doing and who they're affiliated with. I think they are committing what we call premeditated crimes against the people. They're not committing crimes willy-nilly against the people, meaning to do well, but in fact end up doing evil. I think they're conscious and they're evil
and they're consciously evil because they have to make decisions, they have to make plans, they have to attend meetings, and at these meetings, plots are being hatched against the welfare of the people. They consult with people before they decide to oppose legislation that would lighten the oppressive burden of the people. So that I think that they are conscious criminals and they should be brought to justice, revolutionary justice in various arenas. We have war criminals, criminals who deserve the same fate as that meted out by the American forces when they took Tojo, Mussolini, and Hitler and all of their troops and charged them with being war criminals. Since they took those people to Nuremberg, I think that we need a Nuremberg for them and that their trials could appropriately be held in Saigon so the Vietnamese people could put them up against the wall and hang them by their necks until they're dead or shoot them up against the wall because they have murdered the people. And if there's going to be any capital punishment, I think that they deserve it.
And you don't think that they are at all unconscious of being manipulated?
You have three categories of evil to deal with. First and foremost, you have the avaricious businessmen. Second, you have the demagogic politicians. And then you have the strong armed force of the military. We've talked to this country about the military-industrial complex. Domestically, you have to talk about the police-military-industrial complex. Because the police in this country, a lot of people are wondering, they're amazed at the behavior of the police in recent times. They've seen instances, multiplied upon instances, of the Gestapo forces brutalizing the people, such as in Chicago, when they descended upon the heads of the supporters of Eugene McCarthy and brutalized them. You had an example of that right here in New York, when these racist policemen set upon members of the Black Panther Party who were at the courthouse because they had business there. And throughout the country, you see a developing contradiction between the police and the people. And what's happening, and what a lot of people don't understand, is that these police have developed a caste consciousness. They're motivated by the same principles and really the same uptight, patriotic feelings that are traditional among soldiers who see themselves as guarding the borders and warding off an invasion from barbaric hordes. The police see themselves as defending civilization against the niggers in the black community who would come into the white community and destroy all light in Western civilization. They're motivated by considerations of honor, duty, and self-sacrificial service to the people. They feel that they have a bad image, that they're misunderstood. As a matter of fact, they are being blamed in many cases for evils that they are not primarily responsible for. But the point is that they are the strong-armed forces of the power structure, and the power structure, the businessmen, the politicians rely upon them to keep their game going. Because if it were not for the guns of the Gestapo, the clubs of the Gestapo, the gas chambers and electric chairs of the Gestapo, the people would walk into the offices of these corporate criminals, they would walk into the halls of Congress, into the state legislatures, and they would drag these criminals out by their ears and throw them into the garbage cans and into the gutters where they belong. But because there is this occupying army armed to the gill, the people have to deal with them also. And so the police feel that they're being wronged, they're being misused, and so they're moving to vindicate themselves and to create a society in their own image. It's very important to realize that the police departments in this country represent the best organized groups in existence. They're better organized than any of the so-called revolutionary organizations, better organized than any political party, domestically, they're better organized for action on the domestic front than the military.
Well, they have such lovely affiliations with the military anyway.
Well, they do have this, it's an interlocking situation, but I want to bring out the point that they are political organizations. They have well-functioning machinery that's international. The ruling body of this whole conspiracy is the International Association of Chiefs of Police. They have position papers, they have an ideology, they have lobbyists, and they're well-financed, so that they represent a real danger to the people, and they should be dealt with. They have to be corralled and reminded again very forcefully that they're public servants, they're beholden to the people, they're now biting the hand that feeds them, and that hand needs to issue to them a very strong rebuke if it means slapping their head off their shoulders.
Yeah, well, who's going to do this beside the Black Panthers?
Well, we would hope that other people in this country would have enough sense to rise up and help deal with the situation. We don't think that the Black Panther Party or black people alone really can solve the situation. But we're willing to do the things that we do. We're willing to take the chances that we take because we feel that it's necessary to function as a vanguard organization. And by our activity, by our actions, by our deeds, and by our staunch opposition to the system, to set an example that would be educational to the people, and that very soon others will rally to the cause and join us and help us rescue humanity from the clutches of the pigs, also from the boots, the clubs, the mace, the guns, and the gas chambers and electric chairs of the Gestapo police.
I want to get back to the major candidates for a minute. I wanted to ask you what you thought about the Wallace-LeMay ticket. Do you feel that Wallace reflects a genuine sentiment and perhaps a freak accident in that he really represents what the power structure feels, but is verbalizing it to an extent that frightens them?
I think that George Wallace is another tool, another weapon against the people in the arsenal of the power structure. I don't think that his time has come yet. I think that a lot of the publicity that Wallace has received has been purchased by the money of Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon wants and he needs Wallace on the scene so that he can use Wallace as an example of a right-wing extremist, which leaves him as a middle-of-the-roader, with Hubert Humphrey on the left as a wild-eyed radical. So he's making an appeal as a middle-of-the-roader, a very reasonable man who is trying to balance off two extremes. And this is some cheap political machinations, not to be respected by the people, and definitely the people should not be duped by it at the polls.
Would you speak for a minute about the other black presidential candidates, Dick Gregory and Charlotte Mitchell? Dick Gregory of Freedom and Peace and Charlotte Mitchell of Communist Party. Do you think that they are in the same groove as you in terms of attempting to show the futility of working within the political arena as it is structured at this point?
No, I think that they're confusing the issue and they're squandering the resources of the people. I haven't really discussed that with Sister Charlie Mitchell. I've talked to her. I've met her before. But I've talked to Dick Gregory about this. And I think that, of course, I welcome the opposition that they express to the power structure. But I think that they should withdraw from the race, endorse me as their choice for president, and then campaign for me. And they could articulate the same point of view that they're articulating now, but with even more force, because they would be centralizing the opposition in one spearhead. And I think this is necessary. And I think they're being obstinate. In the case of Charlene Mitchell, she's been obstinate in the tradition of the American Communist Party, which is becoming more and more obstinate in the faces of the requirements of a revolutionary situation. They're maintaining the distinction between themselves and the people at all costs. I think this is an improper analysis that they're functioning on. I think they should re-evaluate the situation and see it as their duty to take their best shot, and their best shot would be to support the candidate on the left that would offer the possibility of organizing the largest number of people. And I don't think that Charlene represents that. I don't think that Dick Gregory represents that. And I think that together we could do more if they would withdraw from the race and throw their support behind my own candidacy. I don't say that because of any ego problems or because it's myself. It's simply because I feel that what the Black Panther Party is into, what the Peace and Freedom Party is into, offers a more relevant alternative than to confuse the issue by multiple candidates on the left.